Okay, this is Matthew Richardson from the Manx Museum, and I'm talking to Miss Quillen,
yeah.
Miss Mona Quillen,
yes.
of number 5 St Mary's Avenue, Port St Mary. And this is about the time that you had a family guest house and that you housed internees here during the Second World War. Can you tell me just first of all, when and where you were born?
Oh, I was born at the Four Olds in Port St Mary.
And
26/3/15.
Right, thank you. So, had your family always had a guest house, or?
Yes, because we had a small one at the Four Roads, and then we moved to the Promenade in Port St Mary. And we always had a guest house.
So this was your family business.
Yes, it was my mother's and father's business.
And can you tell us the address of the house in question?
Cronquillan.
Thank you.
Promenade.
So, do you remember anything about the 1930s? What was business like in the 30s? Was it good?
Well, yes, there was quite. It was a different period. There was a lot of family people used to come, and professional people, for usually about 2 weeks or 3 weeks holiday. Some of them used to come for a month, because. It was mostly apartments. You let rooms off them, and they brought them food in, and you cooked it for them and served it to them. But that changed after the war, because it went to full board, you know, catering. But it was a fishing village, you see. There's a lot of fishing boats used to come in the summertime, and be quite interesting to go down to the breakwaters and see all the women. They usually came from Scotland, cleaning the fish outside on the harbour, and then putting them into barrels, and they were getting transported to Russia and Germany. Really? There'd be a big boat come at the end of the season, and all these barrels, hundreds of barrels, would go off to Germany and Russia. So
in the 30s, you still had quite a lively business. There was no hardship or anything like that. It was still quite.
Well, it was a bit more hard. It was living wasn't so easy.
I see.
In that it was limited, really. But you got by.
And how did the outbreak of the Second World War affect you? I mean, did you in the 1930 was the 1939 season a very good one?
Yes, it was. But people by August got a bit panicky. And they all wanted to go home, to get back home. That it finished really at the beginning of September. And that normally we used to go on with the season till the end of September and sometimes into October. But they all wanted to get home and that. So, and like, if they were connected with the forces, well, they had to join up. And if they're in the territorials, well, they were on call. So that everyone. There was a big exodus then to get back.
So with the outbreak of war proper, your business was sort of suspended.
It was suspended. Yes. We like from the was it September or August was it?
Well, the war started at the beginning of September. The 3rd of September.
Yes, yeah. All that winter. Well, it was the uncertainty, and with the news wasn't very good. You know, with all the way they were going on in from France and all the other countries, the Netherlands, that you wondered what was going to happen. And then when it got in May and they started to commandeer the houses.
How did that happen? Can you tell me about that? Did you get a letter? Or?
I think so. I think we got a letter. I think we got an letter saying we either could stay in with the internees or we could move out. You had the option. So we decided to stay in because, well, you'd have to look for other accommodation. And people from the mainland that could get away from the mainland were coming over. They thought it was a more safer area. So there wasn't much property to let. So it was a case of stay put.
Yeah. So nobody sort of came around to inspect you? Nobody came around with a clipboard?
No. It was just, they said, well, there would be an intake during that week and to be prepared. And that was it. And to to secure, you know, doors and to secure that you, you know, your radio, that you wouldn't leave it about, you know, that it, take a habit that they couldn't get access to your radio because there was no television then. And just we just had to wait and see what came. So then they came and that.
So the first batch arrived this sort of late May.
Yes,
late May,
it's. I think it was about the 23rd of May. I'm sure.
Yeah.
It sticks in my mind, you know, that day because I think they'd come up. A lot of them had come from London way and down the south because with the south coast they wanted them cleared out because some of them were friendly and some of them weren't. Well, they were had Nazi sympathy, so they had rounded them all up and put them, a lot of them, in Holloway, the women. And they had to get them out of London, so Case was put them over here where they knew they couldn't do any trouble and that. So.
But how did Port St Mary people feel about having internees?
Well, it's something you had to accept.
It was accepted in the sort of spirit of...
Yes,
yeah.
You felt like, well, they said, well, it was to help to the war effort. Even if you thought you weren't doing, you were feeding them, and people on the mainland having such a struggle, and they were living on the fat of the land, but you couldn't do anything about it. They said, well, if they were on the mainland, they'd have probably made a lot more trouble because they reckoned there was some fifth columnists there amongst them. Well, they made a lot of trouble in the Netherlands and in Belgium and through to France, so that's why they were put over here. That.
So did you have the same batch all through the time that you had your house requisitioned, or did some come and some go?
Well, some you see, there was such panic that they rounded so many up. Then they had tribunals, you see, to sort them out to see if they were all right, that they could veto them. Others, well, they kept that. We didn't have many releases of it. We had the women's camp till for about 18 months, I think. And then they put the women all together into Port Erin. And then we got the mixed camp. That was the married couples. And we had them for about over a year. And then they put as they got released, the numbers went down, so they put the centralised them in Port Erin and that.
So were there any that you particularly became friendly with?
Well, there was one woman, a German woman, Monica Demmeler. She was, she'd been in England quite a few years. She was a cook. They mostly came from Gloucester, from Stroud. There was a school there that had seemed to have a German element, and they all either were teachers or they were in private service. They're working, that they were some of them were very nice, and then there was the few odd ones. But Monica, she was a very good cook. She was working in this house, and she got released because she was engaged to a chap in the RAF, and his people vouched for her that she was all right, so she got released. But every year, up till 2 years ago, she sent us a Christmas card.
Really? So she stayed in touch all that time?
Time, and she used to write letters that if she went back to Germany to see some, I think she'd had relations in Germany, but of course they passed on. But she'd send a card from Germany, say that she'd been to Germany, and that she kept up till 2 years, but I think she must have passed on. They were very bad for, if you were going to speak to them, Linda, come down, come here, they'd stop gibbering in German, and you got to know that you picked up a few words, you could know what they were talking about. She always used to say, if the country's good enough for you to live in, it's good enough for you to speak the language. So then they'd stop and they'd speak in English. She was very good.
And were they sort of allowed out on licence to the shops?
They had, at first they had the whole run of Port St Mary and that. But as they got released, they confined them to the promenade.
Right.
and they were all confined on the promenade. But at the beginning, when about now, yeah. there was such an influx, they had to put them where the authorities had to put them wherever they could find vacate them. But as they got released, they came to the prom.
But were they allowed out to sort of fraternise with people?
Well,
or were
they were no, they were allowed out when the prom was just the in camp to out one day a week to the shops.
I see.
And that, and they used to the police. There was some police, ex policemen from London. They were there. They used to take them for walks out, and but otherwise they were. On their own.
And were they allowed vouchers or ration coupons?
Oh, well, no. We had the rations. We got, we had to fill in a form and say how many people we had in each week, and then we got a form with the amount of rations.
So you got their rations.
We had to get their rations to distribute to them and that. But I don't know how. I don't know about clothing and that. Well, he didn't seem short of clothing. Here, Lindy, come on. Right.
So, if we turn to some of the photographs that you've very kindly lent to us, I've had got some enlargements here.
Yes.
Is there anyone here that you can tell me anything about? Any more? I mean, you're on that one, aren't you?
Yes. This was taken Christmas Day. 1940.
I see. Now, this is the group photograph of you all sitting...
No, it would be... it wouldn't be 1940. 1941.
41.
It was the first...
First Christmas of the war, was it? That would be 40 if it was the first Christmas.
No, it would be 41.
Second Christmas.
Then. Yes. Yeah. Yes. And that's my sister up there.
So your sister's on the back row at the right.
Right.
And you are where? Here. You're on the front row at the left.
And that's Rita...
She's sitting next to you.
She's Astrid, and that's her sister, Paula.
That's her sister at the other end.
Yes. I think they came from the Midlands, but I don't know. I can't remember their surname, because they came from Purwick Bay Hotel, and then when the camps made smaller, they pushed them down. Mm. Yeah. This is the woman, Monica Demmler.
She's the one sitting in the middle there with the white coat on.
That kept up in touch. Mm. And that's that's Florence Bocconi.
She's on the back row at the left.
Left. She was a Cockney girl, and she was married to a German. And that's
so. She was actually English.
Yes, yeah,
she was interned because she was married to a German.
She hadn't applied for a citizenship, is it?
Yes.
She hadn't applied, you see. Mm. So she was interned.
Right.
Yes. And that's Mrs. Pinchot.
Sitting next to her.
She was Austrian. She was a baroness. And those are her two children.
Two children.
That's Maria and Hansel. Mm. And that's Racy.
Now she's sitting next to your sister.
Yes. Yeah. She was German. Her mother married an Englishman. But she was only 18. So she hadn't changed her citizenship. Mm. So she got interned. Mm. And she came from, I think, from Birmingham way. Mm. And that's my sister.
So you all seem to have got on very well. It seems some very nice, friendly photograph.
Yes.
There was no sort of ill feeling between
No. There was, like Mrs. Pinchoff and Monica, they came from Stroud in Gloucester, and then there was Dr. Lairs. Well, she had Nazi sympathies and she was lazy. And there was
she stayed with you. Yes.
And there was a Miss Lazarus. She'd worked in this school, and then there was a Mrs. Mansell. She was Czech.
All right.
And she had three children. It was what they call music and movement something they were doing in this school. Mm. I think it's come more popular now.
Yes.
And they were teaching this. She was there.
So the lady that you said had the Nazi sympathies, did you ever hear her talk about the war
views? Yes, she. They weren't long here there, till she used to come into the back kitchen, you know, when you were getting me, and she'd stand behind you, and she'd say, "Oh, Hitler'll be in the Tower of London next week."
And she meant that quite seriously.
Yes. And there was another one I can't think. was at Kantovich. She's from East Prussia, I think. She'd been working in this school too, and she had rather strong sympathies.
So how did you answer back when she said something like that?
Well, I stuck my chin out and said, "Not in your life." So, but I had mixed feelings because, you see, you had to be careful what you said and when, and like if you were out and you people would tell you that weren't, you know, hadn't camped, they'd say what was had been on the news and what they'd heard. But you know, you never disclosed it with them at all.
Yeah, I was going to say, so news must have been pretty restricted even for you. You wouldn't have known really what was going on.
And
with
see,
the war,
you only got newspapers every other day.
Yeah.
Because the boats were going from Fleetwood and there was only the one boat.
Mm.
And so that you got 2 days' papers at a time and that. Mm. So that, and you see, the mail was censored.
Yes. Yeah.
All the mail that came was censored.
Mm.
That you. But we, it wasn't too bad with these ones. I'll show the other.
Tell us about the other ones. Sorry.
Yes.
This is the portrait format photograph.
Yes.
And who have we got in this one?
Well, that's Geoffrey Mandel.
He's the little boy.
He's the boy that his mother was doing the music. His mother's check, and he had there was a sister. What's her name? Andrea, and. That was Manfred, and there was another boy as well. And I think the husband was in Sweden.
Mm.
She was Czech.
Mm.
But she was a very quiet woman.
But she was presumably a German from the German area of Czechoslovakia.
She didn't discuss it much.
Mm.
Well, she was so busy with her children, Willie didn't have much time, really.
Mm.
And that's Mrs. Heisner. She was a Scottish woman.
Yeah.
She was a school teacher from Glasgow.
Right.
And she married this German.
This is the lady standing up on the back on the left.
And she was a very good pianist.
Mm.
So she used to play the piano a lot
right.
and cheer everybody up.
So she was sort of did the entertainment, really.
Yes,
yeah.
yes.
Yeah, yeah.
And she said she'd been married in Hungary.
Right.
And she had one son, but her parents in Glasgow had stayed with him. So, and that's Rita again. Mm. That's Florence Bocconi.
So that's Rita standing second left.
Yes.
And Florence Bocconi is second from the right.
And the other's Racy.
That's the lady on the right.
And then there's just a bit of Monica Demler there.
Yeah.
And Paula is down below
She's
here.
She's the little girl at the bottom.
Bottom, right? Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, I see. But, When the time came for the internees to be released, this would be towards the end of the war when they all finally went.
Well, I suppose they did.
When they concentrated them into the
Port Ellen. Yeah. You see, after that in Port Ellen, well, the army came, the PAYCOR came, and they commandeered Battle Queen,
right,
and for OCTU,
yes,
that Office Training Corps, so that it was the army, and then the Air Force was. Up at Craigneish, they were all billeted in Carrick Court and in private houses, so that there was a different element after
what,
that.
What about your place?
We a lot of the officers, it was an 8-week course that they were coming up for this PAYCOR, and a lot of their wives used to come over and stay, so we used to have to cater for them. And the same applied with the Air Force, if some of the chaps, wives or relations used to come, but we'd look after them.
So you were still able to run a business?
We were able to, yes, we had to run a business, yeah. Yes.
So you
yes.
had to
yes.
keep your livelihood yes, going
it,
that way.
Yes, yeah. It took quite a while to get the house straightened after the internees went, because when I went upstairs on the top floor, I thought, well, I'll get rid of this carpet, and when I found it, looked down, there was no stair rods.
They'd taken the stair rods?
There was, when the mixed camp was there, there was a chap called Eisler, and he was in the furniture trade.
Right.
And for Christmas, he gave us some wooden buttons.
Mm.
They were our stair rods. And he was selling these buttons, like he'd taken all the stair rods and made buttons, and he was selling them around.
Good Lord.
That you could, you know, you couldn't keep even with them.
Yeah, I was going to say, was there quite a lot of damage to furniture and stuff
Well, another thing for soft toys, they were great at making soft toys, and when we went to get the pillows on the beds, there was hardly any feathers left in them.
Mm.
They'd taken all the feathers and made soft toys.
So they were allowed to sell these bits and pieces?
They were selling them, yes.
To local people?
Well, yes, and between themselves, yes. Yes, yes.
Supposed to give themselves something to do as much as anything else.
Yes, I suppose, and money-wise, yes. They had their own in the mixed camp, they had their own tailor and they had their own shoemaker. And there was at the corner opposite the Co-op, it was a kind of community centre that they could go in and that. And the Jewish community had the town hall on a Friday and Saturday for their services. And that, because at first there was a lot of Jews interned, and then they gradually found they weren't any bother, so they got interned.
So was there any compensation forthcoming from the government for the damage?
Yes, we got a percentage,
but not the whole amount.
Oh, not the whole amount. Mm. No.
So that left you at a disadvantage then, because
we had to put. Buy a lot of new equipment and that, and a lot of things were on coupons those days and that. They did when the mixed camp was there, we were getting short of bedding with 12 months continuing using bedding. They gave us allocations of sheets and blankets.
So when the war finished and you came to start your business up again, catering for tourists, presumably you had a job on your hands to get the place looking up to scratch again.
Yes, we had, yes.
Yeah. It didn't take you a few years to get things.
Well, I think we got it all done in about, within 12 months. We seen what it was wanting doing and we got it all done.
And did things return to normal pretty quickly after the war?
Oh, yes. Oh, there wasn't a foreign travel in those days. That it was really, the season started at Easter and finished in October.
Really, as long as
we had a very good season, yes.
And so it stopped, 1946, straight after the war, it was straight back to normal, was it? It didn't take a while to build back up?
Oh, no.
I suppose everybody wanted a holiday after,
Yes, they wanted, of war. Yes, there was no trouble getting things going.
And did you stay in the holiday trade?
Hello? I think it's 62. Well, I don't know for sure. Anyway, she can't move till a week, not this Friday, it's the following Friday. Oh. Yes. Yes. Oh, well, I'll let you know tomorrow. Okay. Yes. Well, I'm not quite sure. Thank you. I'll see you then.
So, did you stay in the holiday trade for the rest of your working life?
No, we stayed in on the prom till 1960.
Yeah.
And then we moved to the Purwick Bay Hotel.
Yeah, so you kept that hotel?
We kept the hotel and we were there for 16 years. And then we retired.
Right.
Yes.
So you must have seen some changes in the holiday market over the years.
Yes.
When was the high point, would you say, 40s or 50s?
I think it was in the 40s, yes.
And it gradually sort of tailed off?
Off, yes. Yeah. When the foreign travel...
Freddie Laker and his cheap flights.
Right, yes. People got more ambitious and wanted to travel more and that. But,
I see. Well, it's been very, very interesting talking to you. And I just want to say thank you very much for your time.
Yes.
Very, very informative.
Yes. Yes, we had quite a time with the mixed camp.
Mm.
Because the first lot we got, they weren't too bad. And then we got word from the commandant to say to come and see him. That was Mr. Cuthbert. And he said that he wanted to shift some people that had Nazi sympathies all into the together, and they wanted us to take them. But we weren't very keen.
So you could refuse people if you, yes, if you didn't fancy them.
My father, he was working at the, he was a mason, and he was working at Jerby at the airport. And that he was working on other projects, but they commandeered all the tradesmen and put them down to the airport because they had to do lots of extensions down there. And he worked 7 days a week for 2 or 3 years there. And he said, well, he said, if you don't take them, probably you'll have to get out. So we said, oh, well, we'll take them. So we got this batch, and they all had Nazi sympathies. So anyway, they said if we had any trouble, just to ring the office. So, but it wasn't so pleasant, really, with them at all.
It was not so pleasant as it had been when you'd had the single women.
I remember, I think it was the fall of Tubruck. It was in the summertime. It was one Sunday night, and I was upstairs looking out, and there was about a dozen of them gathered outside in the crowd that was in our house, and they were shaking hands, and I wondered what was going on, and I discovered it was the fall of Tubruck. One couple had a son, and he was about 7 or 8, and they had him goose stepping.
Really? Did nobody intervene to stop them?
No, and then they were all giving each other the Nazi salute.
How had they found out about this then? Had they got
I don't know. You see, there was somebody leaking in the camp information, because that's why we got them.
Sorry, somebody from who? One of the guards was leaking?
No, I think it was some of the people they were billeted with.
Right.
Was giving them access.
Right.
So they said, well, they'd put them all together, because these people, they were German, but they'd been living in Guernsey. They were very wealthy.
Right.
And before Jersey got invaded with the Germans, the British government took the whole lot of them out. There were 6 of them, these Hacklanders.
That was their name?
Yes, and they took them and brought them to England.
Hacklander.
And it was the first person I ever seen with a deaf aid. And it, of course, with them having the money, I suppose, and he had it on, and he had a box about bigger than that, strapped to his chest. So the locals called him Tinny Whiskers, because he was very Prussian.
Yeah.
You know, he was white, and he had the beard, you know, the pointed beard and all that. And he'd go, but of course their money was unlimited.
They had access to their own money.
There was an off license, and they drank quite a lot of stuff. And there used to be a special delivery. The van would come with all these crates of stuff to the 6 of them.
There was a family of 6.
6, yes. Yeah. And one of there was Eugen and his wife. And then there was the other chap and his wife, and then they had a son, Hans, and his wife was British, Lillian, and she came from London. They weren't short of money at all.
Any other incidents like that you can remember?
Yes. But when they were there, I think the Germans were advancing to Stalingrad. So where they got this map, I don't know. But anyway, they stuck it up in the lounge, so I didn't take much notes. I thought, well, leave it. I'm not interfering with them. Anyway, as they were advancing to Stalingrad, they were marking each day that they were near to getting to Stalingrad. Well, anyway, when they didn't get, they took the map down.
They weren't so interested after that.
They were very cocky. Oh, we're winning the war. And there was some another couple in. He was quite a nice man. He had Nazi sympathies, but he said, we're unfortunate to have to be billeted with them. And of course, he thought it was a great joke, because they took the map down.
So as the war went on, and they realised they weren't going to win, presumably they became a lot less cocky.
Yes, and you see, I believe when they went to things from when they went to Port Ayre and things were getting better, you see, the people they were interned with could turn round and say something to them. Yeah. But when they were with us, our tongues were tied.
Yes,
you had to be very careful.
Yes, yes.
You had to keep your counsel all the time. You could, you had to be tight-lipped.
Yeah. Right. So your father was away working at Jerby. Who was running the? Was it you and your mother?
No, my mother was dead then.
Oh,
it was just me and my sister.
You and your sister ran the.
Yes. Yes.
So you were, you must have been quite young to be running a.
I was only in my 20s, and she'd be she was 7 years older. She must have been only about 18 or 19. That.
Quite a responsibility for someone
You had to, it was something where you had to tackle and make the best of it and that.
I see.
But,
very good. Well,
I don't know. The next door to us in the women's camp, Hess's cousin was there.
Rudolf Hess.
Yes, his cousin. Helga somebody. She was interned because these people next door, the father, his mother was German, and of course he was all for Germany, and then they got all these women because they weren't ready to take them, so they put a lot of prostitutes in the house. And this Helga, Hess's cousin, was one of them. And then there was another one, Elfie Heinisch. I don't know whether she'd been a model or not. She was in from London. She'd been living in London. And she was friendly with Malcolm Campbell, the race, the water. She'd been one of his girlfriends. There was quite a history attached to them. It was amazing that people in government jobs that had connections with them.
It
came out.
Anyone else you can think of any note that you came across? The German ambassador's wife, she was supposed to have been quite an ardent Nazi. I can't remember her name offhand. But,
I didn't know about her.
Across her. No. The wife of the German ambassador in London. She was over here interned.
Well, she might have been perhaps in Balquhoun or something.
Possibly so. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, but she was supposedly the sort of ringleader of the real diehard Nazi faction.
Oh.
But
because there was one woman, she used to come in to see Dr. Lairs. She was dressed all in brown. Like, wasn't the Hitler Youth thing? They all wore brown uniform, she was always. And she seemed to be the head of this Nazi thing.
Yes.
And they used to meet at opposite the Co-op in Cowley's Cafe. But I didn't hear from the ones that were reliable. They never spoke about it. They seemed to keep into groups,
Okay, well,
Well,
thank you very much.
I don't think there's anything else.
It's been very, very informative.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah.